chapter 20. This is a fairly lengthy chapter, and yet it is the chapter we'll be turning to in a few moments' time. And I would like you to be generally acquainted with this chapter before we look at it in some detail in a few minutes. And so please follow as I read 1 Samuel, the 20th chapter. Then David fled from Naoth in Ramah and came and said to Jonathan, "What have I done? What is my iniquity? And what is my sin before your father that he is seeking my life?" He said to him, "Far from it. You shall not die. Behold, my father does nothing, either great or small, without disclosing it to me. So why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so." Yet David vowed again, saying, "Your father knows well that I have found favor in your sight, and he has said, 'Do not let Jonathan know this, or he will be grieved.' But as truly as the Lord lives, and as your soul lives, there is hardly a step between me and death." And Jonathan said to David, "Whatever you say, I will do for you." So David said to Jonathan, "Behold, tomorrow is the new moon, and I ought to sit down to eat with the king. But let me go, that I may hide myself in the field until the third evening. If your father misses me at all, then say, 'David earnestly asked leave of me to run to Bethlehem, his city, because it is the yearly sacrifice there for the whole family.' If he says it is good, your servant will be safe. But if he's very angry, know that he has decided on evil. Therefore, deal kindly with your servant, for you have brought your servant into a covenant of the Lord with you. But if there is iniquity in me, put me to death yourself. For why then should you bring me to your father?" Jonathan said, "Far be it from you. For if I should indeed learn that evil has been decided by my father to come upon you, then would I not tell you about it?" Then David said to Jonathan, "Who will tell me if your father answers you harshly?" Jonathan said to David, "Come and let us go out into the field." So both of them went out into the field. Then Jonathan said to David, "The Lord, the God of Israel, be witness. When I have sounded out my father about this time tomorrow or the third day, behold, if there is good feeling toward David, shall I not then send to you and make it known to you? If it please my father to do you harm, may the Lord do so to Jonathan and more also, if I do not make it known to you and send you away that you may go in safety. And may the Lord be with you as he has been with my father. If I am still alive, will you not show me the loving kindness of the Lord that I may not die? You shall not cut off your loving kindness from my house forever, not even when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth." So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, "May the Lord require it at the hands of David's enemies." Jonathan made David vow again because of his love for him, because he loved him as he loved his own life. Then Jonathan said to him, "Tomorrow is the new moon, and you will be missed because your seat will be empty. When you have stayed for 3 days, you shall go down quickly and come to the place where you hid yourself on that eventful day, and you shall remain by the stone Ezel. I will shoot 3 arrows to the side as though I shot at a target. And behold, I will send the lad saying, 'Go find the arrows.' If I specifically say to the lad, 'Behold, the arrows are on this side of you, get them,' then come, for there is safety for you and no harm, as the Lord lives. But if I say to the youth, 'Behold, the arrows are beyond you,' go, for the Lord has sent you away. As for the agreement of which you and I have spoken, behold, the Lord is between you and me forever." So David hid in the field. And when the new moon came, the king sat down to eat food. The king sat on his seat as usual, the seat by the wall. Then Jonathan rose up, and Abner sat down by Saul's side, but David's place was empty. Nevertheless, Saul did not speak anything that day. For he thought, "It is an accident. He is not clean. Surely he is not clean." It came about the next day, the second day of the new moon, that David's place was empty. So Saul said to Jonathan his son, "Why has the son of Jesse not come to the meal either yesterday or today. Jonathan then answered Saul, David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem, for he said, please let me go, since our family has a sacrifice in the city, and my brother has commanded me to attend. And now if I have found favor in your sight, please let me get away, that I may see my brothers. For this reason he has not come to the king's table. Then Saul's anger burned against Jonathan, and he said to him, you son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you are choosing the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established. Therefore, now send and bring him to me, for he must surely die. But Jonathan answered Saul his father and said to him, why should he be put to death? What has he done? Then Saul hurled his spear at him to strike him down. So Jonathan knew that his father had decided to put David to death. And Jonathan arose from the table in fierce anger and did not eat food on the second day of the new moon, for he was grieved over David because his father had dishonored him. Now it came about in the morning that Jonathan went out into the field for the appointment with David, and a little lad was with him. He said to his lad, run, find now the arrows which I am about to shoot. And as the lad was running, he shot an arrow past him. When the lad reached the place of the arrow which Jonathan had shot, Jonathan called after the lad and said, is not the arrow beyond you? And Jonathan called after the lad, hurry, be quick, do not stay. And Jonathan's lad picked up the arrow and came to his master, but the lad was not aware of anything. Only Jonathan and David knew about the matter. Then Jonathan gave his weapons to his lad and said to him, go, bring them to the city. When the lad was gone, David rose from the south side and fell on his face to the ground and bowed three times, and they kissed each other and wept together. But David wept the more. Jonathan said to David, go in safety, inasmuch as we have sworn to each other in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord will be between me and you, and between my descendants and your descendants forever. Then he rose and departed while Jonathan went into the city. May God bless this portion of his holy scriptures. I invite you to turn back with me this evening to that very interesting 1 Samuel chapter 20 that we read in its entirety a few minutes ago. This chapter is the narrative of four eventful days in the lives of both David and Jonathan. Days which demonstrated David's fears to be true and Jonathan's hopes to be groundless and indeed we might even say naive. It is the narrative of a difference of opinion as to the danger posed to David by Saul. Jonathan, initially granting to his father the benefit of the doubt and asserting that he truly was a changed man. And David asserting that he was not a changed man at all, but was still intent on doing harm. The title of our study tonight is Covenantal Security. It was the covenant between David and Jonathan that provided the impetus for David to approach Jonathan at this time of danger. It was the covenant between David and Jonathan that caused Jonathan to enter into even a deeper covenant with David at this time, a covenant that would go beyond their lives and a covenant that would guarantee the safety of all of Jonathan's descendants. The whole theme of chapter 20 is covenantal security. And this evening we're going to look at this chapter, following it in the order of the days that it describes. And four very important days are narrated for us in this chapter. And when we think of our lives and we think of our days, we recognize that most of the days that we live on earth are days where nothing great seems to happen. You get up in the morning, you go to work, you come home from work, you're with your family, and you repeat it again the next day. And most of the days that we live in life are fairly boring and fairly tedious, with nothing very much surprising at all about them. But if you've lived any length at all of life, you understand that there are certain days in your life that are very, very important. There are certain days where decisions you make on an individual day will influence your life for the rest of your life. There are certain events that happen on certain days that have life-changing consequences. And so this chapter describes four very important days in the lives of both David and Jonathan. Day 1 is described in verses 1 through 23. Day 2 is described in verses 24 through 26. Day 3 is described in verses 27 through 34. And day 4 is described in verses 35 through 42. Now, please follow along as I endeavor to lead you through the entirety of this chapter in one sermon tonight, as we look at this chapter describing covenantal security in these four very important days in the life of both David and Jonathan. Observe in the first place the important events of the first day. That's described in verses 1 through 23, and I'd like to go into some detail now about this eventful day, that first day when David was once again with Jonathan. David's deliverance through the sovereign activity of God the Holy Spirit, as described in chapter 19, verses 18 through 24, gave David the opportunity to safely leave Ramah and to safely leave Samuel behind and to travel to Jonathan's home in Gibeah. It was God's sovereign activity that caused Saul to have an ecstatic prophetic experience that caused him to be not a danger. As described in chapter 19, he prophesied before Samuel and lay down naked all that day and all that night. Therefore, they say, is Saul among the prophets? And this gave David an opportunity. Here is the man that wanted his life. Here was the man intent on taking his life. And now he's out of the picture. The sovereign activity of God, the Holy Spirit, has brought him into a condition where he could do David no harm. But David had no idea how long this condition was going to last. He just knew his enemy was in the town that I had fled to, and I better get out of town. And so he gets out of town. And where does he go on this first eventful day? Well, he goes right back to Jonathan's home. He goes right back to Gibeah, and he goes to speak to Jonathan. Consider then that their discussion revealed a difference of opinion as to the danger posed to David by Saul. Verses 1 through 3. Then David fled from Naoth and Ramah and came and said to Jonathan, "What have I done? What is my iniquity and what is my sin before your father that he's seeking my life?" He said to him, "Far from it. You shall not die. Behold, my father does nothing, either great or small, without disclosing it to me. So why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so." Yet David vowed again, saying, "Your father knows well that I have found favor in your sight. And he has said, 'Do not let Jonathan know this, or he will be grieved.' But truly, as the Lord lives, and as your soul lives, there's hardly a step between me and death." Here on this first day is revealed this difference of opinion as to the danger posed to David, this difference of opinion as to the character of Saul. Jonathan giving his father the benefit of the doubt, saying he's a changed man. David saying, "No, we can't give him the benefit of the doubt. I know more than you. I've experienced more than you. You don't know. You're obviously been out of the loop. You don't know the kind of murderous intent that's come against me," this difference of opinion between the two. David asks, "What have I done? Why is your father seeking to kill me?" And Jonathan reveals how naive he was at this time. And one gets the impression that Jonathan didn't know about some of these attempts on David's life. One gets the impression that Saul kept sending the men to surround David's house to murder him. One gets the impression that Jonathan didn't even know about that. One gets the impression that Jonathan's just out of the loop of information, because Saul knew that his son had entered into covenant with David. But David asserts that Saul is deliberately keeping Jonathan out of the loop, for he has learned of the covenant between the two, and he heartily disapproves of it. And then on this first day, the second thing that took place on this first day is the test that they both agreed to. Verses 4 through 7. Jonathan said to David, "Whatever you say, I will do for you." So David said to Jonathan, "Behold, tomorrow is the new moon, and I ought to sit down to eat with the king, but let me go that I might hide myself in the field until the third day. If your father misses me at all, then say, 'David earnestly asked leave of me to run to Bethlehem, his city, because it's the yearly sacrifice there for the whole family. If he says it's good, your servant will be safe. But if he's angry, know that he's decided on evil.'" Here's the test. Some commentators jump on this and say David proposes a lie and Jonathan carries out the lie. I think that Dale Ralph Davis, in his commentary on 1 Samuel, is right on target when he says the following: "It is important to distinguish between what the Bible reports and what it recommends. It tells you that Jonathan prevaricated for David. It does not say, 'Go and do likewise.'" The Bible is telling a story here, not teaching ethics. All right, so let's not get sidetracked and ask, what would you do in a situation like this? I know if I was in a situation like this, where a king was out for me, and I needed to know what his real intentions are, I might come up with a creative test myself, and would look fairly disparagingly on those of you that might have wanted to take issue with me. Before you judge David, walk in his sandals. And the Bible is not teaching ethics at this point. The Bible is telling a story about what really happened. David is saying, "Your father's going to miss me. The new moon feast, the new moon festival is described in Numbers 28, 1 Chronicles 23 was coming up every new moon. There was this festival 12 times in the course of a year. When the new moon came, there was this feast, this religious feast, this religious festival. David was expected to be there. But David said, 'I'm going to hide in the field. I'm not actually going to go home to Bethlehem.' And please, Jonathan, watch Saul's reaction to my absence. And if he gets angry, as I suspect he's going to, then you will come to understand the danger that I am in." Consider David's appeal to the covenant between Jonathan and him. Chapter 20 and verse 8. David says to Jonathan, "Therefore deal kindly with your servant, for you have brought your servant into a covenant of the Lord with you. But if there's iniquity in me, put me to death yourself, for why then should you bring me to your father?" And David is now appealing to the covenant. And we must understand that this was entered into back in chapter 18, verses 1 through 5, after David was successful in his personal combat with Goliath, and as the soul of David was knit to the soul of Jonathan. Jonathan was the one who initiated the covenant. It was a covenant of the Lord. And David confesses here two times in verse 8 that he views himself as the lesser of the two in this covenant. He refers to himself as Jonathan's servant. As Jonathan's servant, he reminds Jonathan, "You entered into covenant with me." This is the whole anchor, as it were, in this tumultuous day. Jonathan is one that he can safely go to, he believes, because Jonathan is the one who has entered into covenant with him. To whom could he go at this time? He said, "I could go to my friend Jonathan." And so David appeals to the covenant between Jonathan and him. That covenant involves solemn promises, and And it involved firm commitments. It was a covenant of the Lord, David reminds Jonathan. Jonathan had initiated it. It was this covenant that explained the basis for David to visit Jonathan and to petition him to deal in kindness with him. And that word that's translated there in verse 8 in the New American Standard as kindness is a very, very important Old Testament Hebrew word, hesed, that's variously translated in the Old Testament as love or as loving kindness or as mercy or here as kindness. It's a very important Old Testament word. And one commentator says it's not merely love, but loyal love. Not merely kindness, but dependable kindness. Not merely affection, but affection that has committed itself. And David is reminding Jonathan of what he entered into in covenant with him. Deal in kindness with your servant. Loyal love. Consider, fourthly, by way of subpoint in verses 9 to 11, Jonathan's response to David's appeal. Jonathan says, "Would I not tell you? Do you think that I'm going to put loyalty to my father over loyalty to you? Would I not tell you if I found out that there was going to be harm to you?" Jonathan's response to David's appeal. Verses 9 through 11, Jonathan said, "Far be it from you, for if I should indeed learn that evil has been decided by my father to come upon you, then would I not tell you about it?" This goes back to chapter 19, verses 1 and 2. Look with me there. "Now Saul told Jonathan his son and all his servants to put David to death. But Jonathan, Saul's son, greatly delighted in David. So Jonathan told David, saying, 'Saul, my father, is seeking to put you to death. Now therefore, please be on your guard.'" So Jonathan is saying, "Now, as I have done before, David, I will continue to do. You need not fear that harm is going to come to you through me. You need not fear that." All of these events taking place on this very, very important first day. But then in verses 12 through 17, consider the covenant renewal. And now it's initiated by Jonathan yet again. Jonathan takes David out into the field. And we go from his home in Gibeah now to the scene out into the field where this covenant is renewed. And we wonder, why is Jonathan so intent on renewing the covenant? We could understand why David appeals to the covenant. He's the guy in danger. He's just a step from death. But why is Jonathan so intent on renewing this covenant? And what is Jonathan so concerned about? What is at the center of Jonathan's concern? Well, note his deep concern, verses 14 and 15. "If I am still alive, will you not show me the loving kindness of the Lord that I may not die?" Verse 15, "You shall not cut off your loving kindness from my house forever, not even when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth." It's hard for us to get a grasp on this because we live in a time where we have peaceful succession. When one president loses and another president, when one candidate loses in a national election and another wins, we don't have civil war. We don't have violence. It's why the majority of the nations of the world invest their money here. Because they know that they can depend on the United States. When it moves from one presidency to another, when it moves from one administration to another, when it moves from the administration of a Democrat to a Republican, there's not going to be civil war. But they lived in different times. You understand what Jonathan's concerned about? What he's concerned about is that when David comes to power, that David does not wipe out Jonathan's family. And you might say, that sounds very strange.
But brethren, that's what was done.
That's why Churchill was right. Democracy is the worst form of government,
except for all the others. Except for all the others.
In the Bible, we've got this. We've got this in the Old Testament. We see this again and again. We don't have time tonight to look into it, but I would just encourage you to read 1 Kings 15, 25 through 30. 1 Kings 16, 8 through 13. 2 Kings 10, 1 through 11. Here are accounts of wicked kings of Israel who, when they came to power, absolutely wiped out everybody that was a part of the family of the man that they had just deposed. And this is what Saul wanted to do to David. Saul is saying, Jonathan, you're crazy. This is just not what is not done. You don't enter into covenant with your enemy. You don't enter into covenant with the guy who's going to succeed you. You just don't do it, Jonathan. That's not how the world works. And Jonathan is concerned about this covenant. And their covenantal agreement provided security for both of them. That's why covenantal security is the theme of this chapter. It's the covenantal security that David feels just to approach Jonathan. It's the security that Jonathan feels to enter into a renewal of this covenant so that he can go to bed at night, or he can even die in peace knowing what's going to happen to his children. That they're not going to be harmed. Covenantal security, the whole theme of this chapter. And then in verses, and let me just say that, you know, this is not just of the Old Testament. Even in the 20th century, we see evidences of the same kind of behavior that Jonathan was worried about. The 20th century was the most violent century in the history of the world. If you think that people didn't act like that in the 20th century, then you really need to read about Stalin's purges. The millions of people put to death by that wicked monster when he felt threatened by anybody. Read about what happened under Mao Zedong in China. When Mao Zedong felt threatened by anybody, what would happen to them? Read about what Saddam Hussein has done. Saw a video just this past week of a very eventful day when, in a meeting of what they call a parliament or something like that, he just read out a list of 60-some names. And everybody was asked to stand up. And those poor guys that were asked to stand up soon had a couple of security men at each arm leading them out to be shot. This is how it's done. In many parts of the world, even to this day, not just in the narrative of the Old Testament, when kings depose others. And so their covenantal agreement provided security for both of them. The last thing that happened on this eventful first day was the test that was agreed upon. David, I'm going to go out and I'm going to bring my bow, my arrows, and here's going to be the test. You be at that certain rock we both know about. If I say to the young lad who's not even going to know you're going to be there, the arrows are on the side of the rock, then David, that's a good sign for you. You're going to be in safety. But if I say to the lad, the arrows are beyond you, then that's danger. That's the agreed upon test. Observe in the second place the quiet events of the second day. We have the eventful events of the first day, and now we have the quiet events of the second day. That's verses 24 through 26 of 1 Samuel 20. So David hid in the field, and when the new moon came, the king sat down to eat food. The king sat on his seat as usual, the seat by the wall. Then Jonathan rose up, and Abner sat down by Saul's side, but David's place was empty. Nevertheless, Saul did not speak anything that day, for he thought, it's an accident. He's not clean. Surely he's not clean. There's a religious meeting, a religious meal, the New Moon Festival. The Old Testament Mosaic code, the ceremonial code, allowed people to come to this if they only if they were ceremonially clean. And there were various ways that would render a man ceremonially unclean. And we'll not go into those details, but there was a variety of ways by which a man could be rendered ceremonially unclean, and he could not attend a festival if he was rendered ceremonially unclean until he went through the ritual washings of becoming clean again. And Saul just thought, this absence of David, he's watching, he's not saying anything to anybody, it's just going on in his mind, surely he's unclean, that's why he's not here, that's why his place is empty. This is the quiet events of the second day. But then observe in the third place the explosive events of the third day. The third day is described in verses 27 through 34, and now everything explodes. Verses 27 through 29, Jonathan explains David's absence. Verses 27 through 29, it came about the next day, the second day of the new moon, that David's place was empty. So Saul said to Jonathan, his son, "Why has the son of Jesse not come to the meal, either yesterday or today?" Jonathan then answered Saul, "David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem, for he said, 'Please let me go, since our family has a sacrifice in the city, and my brother has commanded me to attend. And now if I have found favor in your sight, please let me get away, that I may see my brothers. For this reason he has not come to the king's table.'" Jonathan explains away David's absence. He does it in accord with what he and David had agreed upon. David's not in Bethlehem. He's out in the field. He's camping out, kids. He's waiting for the news. He's out in the field. Then in verses 30 through 31, we have Saul's verbal abuse, which is followed by Saul's physical abuse. Saul is an abusive man, and he verbally abuses his son, verses 30 and 31. I find this hilarious, but it's so typical of many men. But notice with me, verse 30 and 31, that Saul's anger burned against Jonathan, and he said to him, "You son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you're choosing the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established. Therefore now send and bring him, for he must surely die." Here's his verbal abuse of his own son. What he's doing is this. Let's analyze this. He believes that he detects rebellion in Jonathan. Jonathan has not carried out his directives. Jonathan, my son, is rebellious. How do I explain the rebellion in Jonathan? Has to be his mother. Has to be his mother. It's the genes from that side. That's the only way to explain it. "You son of a perverse, rebellious woman." Gotta be his mother. Can't be me. And this is hilarious. But this is so typical, isn't it? Of a man failing to see himself and what he may have passed on to his son. There's humor even in these narrative portions of the scriptures. I mean, you talk about blame shifting. This is rich with what he says concerning the rebellion that he thinks he sees in his son. He accuses Jonathan of choosing David. And you know, and this is so important, this really gets at the heart of it. There are four very important words that explains what ruled the heart of Saul and what he was saying ought to rule the heart of Jonathan. And these four important words are found in verse 31, "you nor your kingdom." He reveals what governed his own heart And what he asserts should govern Jonathan. Neither you nor your kingdom is going to be established as long as David lives. And Jonathan, don't you know that's what you ought to live for? You and your kingdom. You and your kingdom. And Jonathan wasn't living for him and his kingdom. If Jonathan had heard the Sermon on the Mount, when he heard Jesus say, "Seek first God's kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you," he would have found his heart going out to that, because that's what Jonathan is choosing right here now. He's not concerned about him. He's not concerned about his kingdom. And yet Saul is saying to him, "Jonathan, that's what you ought to be concerned about. You and your kingdom." Now, last night at our fellowship dinner, we sang some choruses. And one of the choruses that we sang was, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness." Just a simple chorus from the Sermon on the Mount. But do you realize what that means? Very often we sing things like that and we don't really contemplate what they really mean. Seek first God's kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. It means, brethren, and think about this, that you and your kingdom are not what you are to be seeking for. And if you are seeking you and your kingdom, you are not seeking God's kingdom and his righteousness. And everything in your life is wrong if you're seeking you and your kingdom, whatever you and your kingdom consists of in your own mind, in your own game plan for life. That is not to be the focus of the Christian. And yet Saul was saying, "That's my focus. That's what governs my heart. Me and my kingdom." This is why he's so intent on destroying David. Because he had heard from Samuel, "God has torn the kingdom away from you and given it to your neighbor who's better than you." And Saul understood that this man that has been given the kingdom is alive at this present time. There's a threat out there to me and to my kingdom. And Jonathan, he's revealing his heart. "This is what rules my heart. Jonathan, this is what is to rule your heart. What in the world are you doing entering into covenant with David?" And we learn from this that we are to be like Jonathan, and we're not to be like Saul, and we are not to seek ourselves, and we're not to seek our kingdoms, we're not to seek to glorify our names. We're the purchased possession of Jesus Christ if you're a Christian. You are not your own, is the teaching of Scripture. You were bought with a price, therefore glorify God in your body. This is how we are to view ourselves. We are the servants of King Jesus. We do not belong to ourselves. We are purchased slaves of King Jesus. And here is what Saul reveals governed his heart at this time. And then verses 32 through 34, Saul's verbal abuse led to physical abuse, which we understand frequently happens. Abusive people verbally will often become abusive people physically. And Saul's physical abuse followed his verbal abuse. And he casts his javelin again. Three times he cast it at David. Now he casts it at his own son. And Jonathan arises from that table, it says, in fierce anger. Fierce anger. And nothing wrong with Jonathan's fierce anger. Absolutely nothing wrong with it. If he did not arise from that table in fierce anger at what he had learned, then it would have revealed that he was morally inferior, not morally superior. Saul's physical abuse and the response, verses 32 to 34. And then observe in the last place tonight the sad events of the fourth day. We've gone through 1, 2, and 3 days, these very important days, but observe in the last place tonight the sad events of the fourth day. And follow along as I read verses 35 through 42. Now it came about in the morning that Jonathan went out into the field for the appointment with David, and a little lad was with him. He said to his lad, "Run, find now the arrows which I'm about to shoot." As the lad was running, he shot an arrow past him. When the lad reached the place of the arrow which Jonathan had shot, Jonathan called after the lad and said, "Is not the arrow beyond you?" And Jonathan called after the lad, "Hurry, be quick, do not stay." And Jonathan's lad picked up the arrow and came to his master, but the lad was not aware of anything. Only Jonathan and David knew about the matter. And then Jonathan gave his weapons to his lad and said to him, "Go, bring them to the city." And when the lad was gone, David rose from the south side and fell on his face to the ground and bowed 3 times. And they kissed each other and wept together, but David wept the more. And Jonathan said to David, "Go in safety. Inasmuch as we have sworn to each other in the name of the Lord, saying, 'The Lord will be between me and you, and between my descendants and your descendants forever.'" And then he rose and departed while Jonathan went into the city. What a sad day. I believe there was only one more day that these two dear friends ever met in this world. When next Jonathan meets David, he seeks him out when David's in exile and encourages him in God. And when they parted that time, they met never again in this life. And what a sad fourth day this was. The agreed upon test is there. Jonathan's there with his bow, his arrows. The little boy is undoubtedly very excited about being out with Jonathan. One wonders if it was his son. Jonathan does something that wouldn't pass muster at a hunter safety course. He says to the lad, "Start running." As the lad's running, he shoots the arrow past him. Never do that, kids. Never, ever do that. We always say, "You stay behind me. You stay behind the bow. You stay behind the gun. You never go out in front. Never, ever, ever." But this is describing what happened, not what ought to be. And the whole test in this sad, sad day, when these men both came to an agreement about what a wretch Saul was, that Jonathan comes to agree, "David, you were right. I was naive. I thought he was a better man than he is. I gave him the benefit of the doubt. I was wrong. He's not the man that I thought he was. You were right. He has revealed his true character by his actions." And they part on this sad day. I have 2 things to say in concluding application. The first is this: learn from Jonathan that some things are more important than family relationships. That's a very important thing to learn in the Christian life. Family is not the most important thing. There are some things that are more important than family relationships. Jonathan would have understood had he lived and heard the Lord Jesus say, "If any man does not hate by comparison with his love for me, father, mother, sister, brother, he is not worthy of me." Jonathan would have understood that. Learn from Jonathan that some things are more important than family relationships, and doing what is right is more important than keeping up relationships by doing what is wrong. Doing what is right is more important than keeping up relationships by doing what is wrong. And some people will only keep up a relationship with you if you go along with them in what they want to do, even if it's wrong. And you have to understand that as a Christian, if that temptation ever comes your way, then doing the right thing is the necessary thing at that time. Doing what is right is more important than keeping up relationships through doing what is wrong. Dale Ralph Davis, in his excellent commentary on 1 Samuel, had a couple of choice quotes that I'd like to share with you. One is this: "True life does not consist in securing you and your kingdom, but in reflecting the Lord's faithfulness in covenant relationships." That's how I want to end my day. As being a man who's been faithful to his covenantal relationships. The man who's faithful to his covenantal relationships is a far better man than the man who has secured him and his kingdom. And true life consists not in securing you and your kingdom, but in reflecting the Lord's faithfulness in covenant relationships. And then this wonderful quote: "Life does not consist in achieving your goals, but in fulfilling your promises." That's where real life is. Not in achieving your goals, but just in fulfilling your promises. What security there is in covenant relationships, isn't there? The most important of which, probably, as far as our happiness is concerned, is the relationship we have with our spouse. We have a dear brother and sister who was with us this morning, both going through a very severe trial at one and the same time. She with breast cancer, he with a malignancy in his brain. What do you think brings real security to them and their household at this time? Well, you say, of course, the relationship with the Lord. And yeah, of course, that too. That's obviously the most important. But don't you think that a real secure anchor to them at this time is the promise they made many years ago that in sickness and in health, I will be faithful to you? When you have a home where there is that kind of seriousness given to covenant, it does not matter much all the nonsense you have to put up with in the world if you can come home to a home where people are intent on staying faithful in covenant relationship. That's where security and happiness is found. Let us learn from Jonathan that some things are more important than family relationships. Doing what is right is always more important. Let us learn from David to entrust yourself to one who has entered into covenant with you. This is what David did. And he asked counsel of somebody else who was steeped in the culture of the day and the propriety of the day. And if he had asked counsel from somebody saying, you know, I'm in a situation where they're after me to kill me. I really have men that are seeking to take my life. Would you advise me? I'm thinking of going to Jonathan in Gibeah. Would you advise that? There would be people who would say, are you crazy? Go to the crown prince, the one who has everything to gain by your death and nothing to gain by having you continue to live. Go to him. That's what they would have said. It just flew in the face of everyday wisdom. But let us learn from David to entrust yourself to one was entered into covenant with you. David felt that he could go to Jonathan because Jonathan had entered into covenant with him. You can see where I'm going with this. Who can we flee to but to the one who's entered into covenant with us? Not us with him, but he with us. We read these words so often that perhaps we don't catch the importance of them, the seriousness of these words. In Matthew chapter 26, where the Lord says this, and while they were eating, Jesus took bread, and after a blessing, he broke it and gave it to the disciples and said, take, eat, this is my body. And when he had taken a cup and given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, drink from it, all of you, for this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for forgiveness of sins. But I say to you, I will not drink of this fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. To whom can we go but to the one who has entered into covenant with us? And he has demonstrated his covenant love to us by pouring out the blood of the covenant on the cross of Calvary. And the one that this blood of the covenant that has secured our forgiveness, has secured our justification, let us learn from David to entrust yourself to the one who has entered into covenant with you. What a great theme is covenantal security. It's what 1 Samuel chapter 20 is all about. The whole idea of covenant ought to provide security for us in covenantal relations in life, and particularly in the covenantal relationship between us, the great mediator of the new covenant, the Lord Jesus Christ. How thankful we ought to be for these portions of God's holy word.